In another part of the Middle East, September 11th strikes a more recent chord. It was on the 11th of September, 1990, that George W. Bush Sr., then President of the U.S., made a speech to a joint session of Congress announcing his government's decision to go to war against Iraq. The U.S. government says that Saddam Hussein is a war criminal, a cruel military despot who has committed genocide against his own people. That's a fairly accurate description of the man. In 1988, Saddam Hussein razed hundreds of villages in northern Iraq and used chemical weapons and machine guns to kill thousands of Kurdish people. Today we know that that same year, the U.S. government provided him with $500 million in subsidies to buy American farm products. The next year, after he had successfully completed his genocidal campaign, the U.S. government doubled its subsidy to $1 billion. It also provided him with high-quality germ seed for anthrax and helicopters and dual-use material that could be used to manufacture chemical and biological weapons. So it turns out that while Saddam Hussein was carrying out his worst atrocities, the US and the UK governments were his close allies. So what changed? In 1990, Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait. His sin was not so much that he had committed an act of war, but that he had acted independently without orders from his master. This display of independence was enough to upset the power equation in the Gulf. So it was decided that Saddam Hussein be exterminated like a pet that has outlived its owner's affection. The first Allied attack on Iraq took place in January 91. The world watched the primetime war as it was played out on TV. In India those days, you had to go to a five-star hotel lobby to watch CNN. Tens of thousands of people were killed in a month of devastating bombing. What many do not know is that the war never ended then. The initial fury simmered down into the longest sustained air attack on a country since the Vietnam War. Over the last decade, American and British forces have fired thousands of missiles and bombs on Iraq. In the decade of economic sanctions that followed the war, Iraqi civilians have been denied food, medicine, hospital equipment, ambulances, clean water, the basic essentials. About 500,000 Iraqi children have died as a result of the sanctions. Of them, Madeleine Albright, then U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, famously said, "It's a very hard choice, but we think the price is worth it." Moral equivalence was the term that was used to denounce those of us who criticized the war on Afghanistan. Madeleine Albright cannot be accused of moral equivalence. What she said was just straightforward algebra. A decade of bombing has not managed to dislodge Saddam Hussein, the beast of Baghdad. Now, almost 12 years on, President George Bush Jr. has ratcheted up the rhetoric once again. He's proposing an all-out war whose goal is nothing short of a regime change. The New York Times says that the Bush administration is, quote, following a meticulously planned strategy to persuade the public, the Congress, and the allies of the need to confront the threat of Saddam Hussein. Andrew H. Card Jr., the White House Chief of Staff, described how the administration was stepping up its war plans for the fall. And I quote, "From a marketing point of view," he said, "you don't introduce new products in August." This time, the catchphrase for Washington's new product is not the plight of Kuwaiti people, but the assertion that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. Forget the feckless moralizing of peace lobbies, wrote Richard Perle, a former advisor to President Bush. We need to get him before he gets us. Weapons inspectors have conflicting reports of the status of Iraq's weapons of mass destruction, and many have said clearly that its arsenal has been dismantled and that it does not have the capacity to build one. However, there is no confusion over the extent and range of America's arsenal of nuclear and chemical weapons. Would the U.S. government welcome weapons inspectors? Would the U.K. or Israel? What if Iraq does have a nuclear weapon? Does that justify a preemptive U.S. strike? The U.S. has the largest arsenal of nuclear weapons in the world, and it's the only country in the world to have actually used them on civilian populations. If the U.S. is justified in launching a preemptive strike on Iraq, why then any nuclear power is justified in carrying out a preemptive strike on any other? India could attack Pakistan, or the other way around. If the U.S. government develops a distaste for, say, the Indian Prime Minister, can it just take him out with a preemptive strike? Recently, the United States played an important part in forcing India and Pakistan back from the brink of war. Is it so hard for it to take its own advice? Who is guilty of feckless moralizing, of preaching peace while it wages war?